I think a lot of times entrepreneurs and business people in general forget who it's all about. And it's all about you. It's not about me. Oftentimes you're invited to participate in things because it's not about who you are. It's about the position you hold. And I think another thing which sort of sums that up is the importance of checking your ego at the door. What I've learned is it's all about the team you surround yourself with, and you will go so much further as not only an entrepreneur, but as a business leader when you celebrate the success of others more than that of your own.
Welcome to The Road to Why by the Northern Trust Institute, the show where business owners and entrepreneurs discuss their life's work and explore the intersection of business, family, wealth, and legacy. I'm your host, Eric Chapaya, Director of Business Services at Northern Trust. What do you get when you combine the entrepreneurial spirit with great hospitality? You get our guest today, John Oppenheimer. John is founder and chairman of Seattle-based Columbia Hospitality, which manages over 100 properties across the U.S., including hotels, resorts, golf courses, residential communities, and event venues. In addition to launching Columbia Hospitality in 1995, John has also founded five other successful hospitality businesses. In today's discussion, John and I cover a broad range of topics from his book, Keys to the Room, including business insights, advice for young entrepreneurs, and how to, quote, let your children be the teachers, as John puts it. But first, as we do with all our guests, let's start at the beginning and find out how John's childhood helped shape him into the person he is today.
I grew up, Eric, in Boise, Idaho, which was a spectacular place to grow up because it's a small town. And in a small town, you have an opportunity to experience and experiment in a lot of different areas. So it was a bit of a Norman Rockwell childhood, which I cherished. I was the youngest, or I am the youngest, of three siblings. My brothers and my sister sort of paved the way. And my father was an entrepreneur. And by the time I was born, he had been a successful business leader. And so while my brothers went on camping trips, I went to great hotels. So it was a great position to be in.
And your parents, I think, from reading your book, Keys to the Room, were an important influence on your life, I believe. And I know in a part of the book, you mention your mom's magnificent lessons, and you capitalize that. So that's almost like a memorialized thing in your family. Can you elaborate maybe on what some of those lessons were that were important to you?
My mother and father, who have passed away, but my father was alive until he was 88, my mother 93. And so we celebrate that we had them healthy and a big part of our lives and our children's lives for a long, long time. They still are a big part of my life. I'm sitting at my desk right now and looking at the wall to the right of my desk. I have a framed picture of my mom and dad and a framed picture of my wife and kids. And I often look at those pictures and say, what would make them proud? What would they do? And so my mother had a wonderful perspective in life. She was a go-for-it lady that was always continually learning and was a big influence. My father was a business person that always believed in taking risk and giving things a shot. He grew up in New York City and worked at Bloomingdale's selling draperies and married my mother, who was from Boise, Idaho, and moved to Boise and said, I'm going to live in Idaho. If I'm going to live in Idaho, I've got to get involved in what Idaho's famous for. So he started a company that sold and brokered potatoes and onions and other Idaho products. And that was the beginning of his first business, which was a wonderful example and role model for what I eventually ended up doing.
One of your mother's lessons, I believe, was you never know what's going to happen when you wake up. I really love that one, which I read about in your book.
Right. Not only you never know what's going to happen, but it'll all work out. And so one of her lessons was, you know, don't overthink, don't overworry, and it'll all work out. My brother, my oldest brother, wrote a book about my mom, and it's called It'll All Work Out, because that was sort of her theme.
Well, can we jump for a minute back one more generation to your grandfather? And I'd love for you to share his approach to individuals who wanted to date your mother, because I think that's such a funny anecdote, but also an interesting lesson in this idea of always respecting others.
My grandfather, who I unfortunately did not know, but feel like I knew because he had passed away when I was born, but there he was legendary in Boise, Idaho. He owned a string of department stores, and his attitude was, you treat everybody with respect and dignity no matter what. He believed very strongly, as did my parents, as do I, that people deserve second and third chances. And we grew up in the home my mother grew up in, which was 9 blocks away from the Idaho State Penitentiary. And my grandfather volunteered at that penitentiary to help with teaching and coaching and tutoring of prisoners. And when people would date my mom, the story goes that sometimes he would say, let's take a walk. And they would walk down to the penitentiary. And most of the prisoners and certainly the guards all knew him, knew my grandfather. And he would judge the person that wanted to date my mother based on how they reacted to those people that were incarcerated.
I would love to talk a little bit about the roots of your own entrepreneurial spirit, if you will, because I think you mentioned your dad would take you on business trips, and he was a successful entrepreneur. You also got started very early as an entrepreneur, I think at the age of 6. Would you mind sharing maybe that story with us in some of your very early childhood business ventures, if you will?
I've always loved business. And when I was 6 years old, my parents, who were pretty social, would have dinner parties, and I would answer the door, and I would invite the men guests to take off their shoes while they were there. And, you know, they were just being nice to the 6-year-old. And then I would shine the shoes and ask them if they liked the shoe shine, maybe perhaps they would like to offer me a gratuity, which was the beginning of my entrepreneur spirit, I think. And then as I grew up, I went on to my first ever job at the Boise, Idaho airport, because as you mentioned, I traveled a little bit with my parents and my family, and I would see in these big, like in LA and other airports, I would see skycaps and helping people with luggage. I'm not sure, skycaps are not as big a deal today, but in Boise, Idaho, they didn't have skycaps. So a friend and I in 8th grade went and asked the airlines in Boise if we could be the skycap, and they said, well, we can't pay you. You're not old enough to get paid, but we'll give you a snazzy vest and you can live on tips. And good luck to you. And so we did that for 2 summers. And that's when I first learned about the importance of guest and customer service. And in Boise, when you're trying to help people with their luggage and they never had skycaps, the first thing we had to do is we had to educate the folks that drove up to the airport that we weren't trying to steal their luggage.
That is a very prodigious business venture for someone in the 8th grade, convincing the airport that you could do it, the customer service aspects of a new service you're bringing to an airport, and all before you reach high school. I'm impressed. Well, if we think about your journey as an entrepreneur, which, like you said, started at the age of 6 and is followed throughout the course of your life, one thing people like to ask entrepreneurs is, you know, what's your secret to success? I, for whatever reason, like to flip that question on its head. And I'm curious, what, in your opinion, or experience, do entrepreneurs get wrong?
I think a lot of times entrepreneurs and business people in general forget who it's all about. And it's all about you. It's not about me. Oftentimes, you're invited to participate in things because of the position you hold. It's not about who you are. It's about the position you hold. And I think another thing which sort of sums that up is the importance of checking your ego at the door. What I've learned is it's all about the team you surround yourself with, and you will go so much further as not only an entrepreneur, but as a business leader when you celebrate the success of others more than that of your own.
So many of our guests have said something of the same variety, which is the reason I am successful is because I find talented people and I cultivate their talents and I allow them to do more than they thought they were able to do. Well, on the topic of business, one of the things I love about your book is it is chock full of insights on anecdotes, business practices that you've used over the years that have worked well for you and your team. You've successfully founded, I think, 5 businesses, all in this sort of hospitality-related industry. I would love it, if you don't mind, if I could call out a couple of those insights and maybe have you elaborate on them, if you don't mind. Number one, you said you're not a big believer in 5-year plans. What does that mean?
so many books you read say you've got to have a good, solid strategic plan. I've never been a big believer in that. I am a believer in goals, but if we had a ironclad strategic plan, we wouldn't be in some of the businesses that we're in. I started Columbia Hospitality because we saw as an outgrowth of another company, and we saw a niche and an opportunity and seized it. Had we had a five-year strategic plan, never would it be in there that we would start a hospitality company. We operate and are as partners the cruise terminals in Seattle, Washington. If we had a plan, we never would have said, let's develop a cruise terminal in Seattle, Washington. Myself and two other partners were the developers of the Four Seasons Hotel in Seattle. That was seizing an opportunity. If we had a plan, we never would have written, you know, let's develop a Four Seasons Hotel in Seattle, Washington. So that's why I'm a huge believer in having goals, but I think you got to seize the opportunity is my point.
Well, on another business insight in your book, I think we all struggle these days with just being bombarded by all of the electronic ways we can communicate with people and that we receive information. And you have a simple principle in your book, which is if someone calls you and you can't answer their call within three rings, you make an effort to call them back within 10 minutes. Why is that? How does that work for you?
Yes, I put that in the book. I don't know that I should have because I don't always succeed in 10 minutes, but I always call people back, whether it's a vendor trying to sell you something or it's one of your biggest partners or investors. My belief is you respond and you respond with urgency. And so I also think it's important to pick up the phone as much as you pick up the keyboard. And it's a competitive advantage in my view to use verbal communications as much as you use written communications because it's an opportunity to build a relationship. And I worry we drift away from that in our business communities. And we say things in email we wouldn't say to each other in person or over the phone. And I think since COVID, some of the new video form of communication has been a plus and has enhanced that because at least you can see the people.
Columbia Hospitality operates over 100 properties across the U.S., and every golf course, resort, and residential community requires a highly trained staff to keep things running smoothly, which prompted my next question to John. What does he look for when interviewing people to join his team?
The most important part of interviewing candidates to be a part of the family of this company is to realize it's a two-way interview. And it's where the sales experience begins because they're interviewing you as much as you're interviewing them. And for someone to join our organization, we recognize that it's got to be a two-way fit. If they love what they do, they're going to excel as much as we want to be the place of choice that people are dying to work for. So I want to know them as much as their skills. In the hospitality industry, you can teach skills. It's not like being a brain surgeon. You can teach it if people have it in their gut to serve and to be focused on the hospitality of others. So I'm interested in who they are, what motivates them, and what excites them. And one of the questions I always ask is, what will make this the best position you've ever had? What's just Mecca in terms of a position that you're interested in filling? What would make this great for you?
And then you have, is it the plane test? If you're sitting in next to this candidate on a plane?
Yes. Sometimes I think when I'm talking to someone, I think to myself, if I was sitting next to this person on a plane, would I engage in a conversation after I said hello to them? And oftentimes a plane's a great place to sort of have a reprieve from conversations. But sometimes I think in my head, if I was sitting next to this person, how much would we talk and what would we talk about? And that's sort of, in my view, a little bit of a litmus test. And I'm also judging, we are in the hospitality business, it is a fun business. So I'm judgy about how much fun is this person? How much enthusiasm do they have? And I also am interested, like so many people ask, what questions do you have? I'm also interested in what questions they have. And then we've all interviewed lots and lots and lots and lots of people over the years. So sometimes I do things that are a little bit unorthodox. We had a candidate that was referred to us by a nephew of mine. And when he walked in the office, this is probably the sign I had too much time on my hands. I had gotten a picture of this candidate and I framed it 10 different places and I put it all over my desk, all over my office. So when he walked in, there was a framed picture of him to see how he responded to that.
That's great.
That's probably a combination of my own entertainment and mean, but he did very well.
How did he respond? Was he just rolled with the punches or?
Yeah, he just looked at it and then he never said anything. And then afterwards, he sent me an email thanking me and said, I noticed you had some very fine artwork throughout your office. What's that all about?
I want to turn to the topic of family. You and your wife, Deanna, have two children. And a lot of times, the children of entrepreneurs are growing up in the shadow of their parents' success, and maybe with the responsibility or potential expectation of inheriting their wealth, or, you know, even maybe inheriting their business that they built. And at the same time, their parents want to instill in their children the values that are important to them, but give them the opportunity to find their own interests in life and pursue them in an entrepreneurial way, if you will. What are your thoughts on this idea of cultivating that within them?
I think with raising kids, if there were a single most important element of creating opportunities for them to have success, it's being sure your kids have their own passion and let them be the experts. In our family, our daughter became very interested in horses, which worried me because horses can be expensive. But that became her passion, and she developed a lot more expertise than Deanna, my wife, or I developed. She was the expert. So learning from her all about horses was fantastic. It also gave her a chance to have her own entrepreneurial outlet. She started when she was in high school, a camp. She had two horses, and she started a camp where she marketed giving horseback riding lessons, and she charged $500 per student, and it was 1 week of giving horseback riding lessons. And then at the end of the week, they had a graduation ceremony where my wife and I were required to come cook hamburgers and celebrate, and so she had no expenses for that, and so she made $5,000 a week studying her passion. Our son got into go-kart racing and became a very fast go-kart racer in high school. He did that through college as well. And so the lesson we learned from that is let your kids be the teachers.
Let's take the horseback riding business. It's something your daughter knows a lot more about than you, and it's something that she's very interested in. But at the same time, you've built many successful businesses. Do you go to her with advice? Does she come to you, you know, when she's building this, says, you know, Dad, what do you think about how to manage my expenses or how should I market this? Is there a conversation around that?
The horseback riding classes was a long time ago when she was in high school. And when you're in high school, there's not too much of that kind of conversation. It's more, here's what I'm doing. And our job was to support and encourage. There wasn't too much, you know, what's your advice? And then you reach a time, and I'm so lucky, both our daughter Jenny and our son James are in work at Columbia Hospitality, and both of them are doing exceptionally well. And you reach a point where you wake up one day and say, what happened here? Our kids are more mature than we are.
And how did they get involved in the business? Did they come to you and say, hey, Dad, I'm interested in working for the company? Or how did that conversation transpire?
They've always been close and they wanted to work together. And when they were in college, I would meet with them once a quarter and just sort of talk about the business and learn from them and ask their ideas. And then we had sort of an unwritten rule that it was important for them to have other experiences. So they both, when they graduated from college, they both worked in other industries and in other parts of the country for 5 years. And then first our son came and said, I'm interested in moving back to Seattle and I'm interested in joining Columbia Hospitality. What do you think? And I delegated that to one of my colleagues. I decided to stay out of the day-to-day. And he started with Columbia Hospitality, and his first job, after having some great jobs back east, his first job was in the laundry room, where he had to report at 4 a.m. and work in the laundry room. And then after 6 months, he got promoted to housekeeping for 6 months and then to the kitchen. And he spent 2 years just learning the business at the grassroots. One of the successes of that was he has relationships with all kinds of people within the company that he's kept up, that he were his colleagues. Now he's doing development work. Our daughter, she was living in Chicago, and she asked my colleague if she went to work for a hospitality company and did this ground floor entry-level work, would that count? So she worked for another hospitality company for 4 years, having the same kind of experience our son had with us.
Some business owners may be hesitant to hire family members into the business. John, however, takes a very different approach and actively encourages employees to recruit other members of their family to join the company. So I asked John, why is hiring family so important to him?
We not only promote family members joining the business, not just our family, but family members in general joining the business, but we love it. We love the idea that if you're working at a hotel and you recruit your spouse or your cousin or your niece or your nephew, that's the highest form of compliment. If you didn't love your job, you would not encourage your family members to be colleagues of yours. So we encourage and we reward people to recruit others, not only family members, but others. And it just enhances the family spirit of the organization. And it's the highest, to me, it's the highest form of compliment. And we haven't done the survey in a while, but I think at last count, it was above 80. It was a little over 100 family members that worked together.
Yeah, it's great for the culture of the business, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the more family spirit we can have, the better.
Well, turning back to your own family outside of the business, one of the challenges a lot of our clients face is this idea of family consensus. And that might be around the sale of the business or some other aspect of the family where it's difficult to get everyone on the same page. And I think you have in your book, you mentioned this idea of providing veto power to family members. Maybe can you share with us what you mean by that?
Yes. Veto power on occasion. Input a lot. And so veto power, not all of the time with our kids, but certainly input from them makes for more informed decisions. And so we have always sought their input and listened to their input and learned from their input. The story that I mentioned in the book was my wife, Deanna, was offered an extraordinary job to become the leader of a financial institution in London. That was a big, big, big deal, because it meant she would work in London and I would work in Seattle. I spent 2 weeks in Seattle, 2 weeks in London for 5 years, and our kids were in school in London. And we sat down with our kids, who at the time were in eighth grade and a high school, going in to become a high school senior. And we said, this has to be, and it was really Deanna that led this conversation. She said, this has to be a unanimous decision. And our daughter, who was going to be a senior in high school, and we thought would be totally against it. It's like, well, I'm out of high school in a year anyway. If my year can be in London, fantastic. I'm all in. And our son said, no vote. I'm not voting. I've never been to London. I would have to go there and check it out. And so 2 days later, my wife and son were in London, and suddenly the company was recruiting him as much as they were her. But that had to be a unanimous decision. And I think that served us very well. And it was an extraordinary 5-year experience.
Yeah, it's a great approach that we've seen work well, which to your point is always soliciting feedback and allowing your kids to feel like they are part of these decisions. And then, you know, for big ticket decisions, allowing them to have this review, but also in some instances, a veto power.
Right. And it leads to more informed decisions. I mean, it's not just for appearances. We genuinely learn from those discussions with our kids.
You mentioned your wife, Deanna. She is also a successful entrepreneur. It seems like entrepreneurship runs deep throughout your family. I'm curious how the two of you work together or manage life together as two individuals raising kids and who each have their own entrepreneurial path they're pursuing.
Deanna is my biggest advisor and most important counselor. I'm not sure she would say she's an entrepreneur because she has always worked in large corporations, and it's been a wonderful combination. I've always been a small company person. I mean, our company is relatively small. We have 4,000 employees. She's worked in companies with hundreds of thousands of employees. And so having her perspective has been absolutely critical. And she's the first person that I lean to learn from and ask advice from. So it's been fantastic. She has never been in the hospitality business. She's always been in your industry, in the financial services world. But recently, in the last year, she's become the chair of the board of IHG, Intercontinental Hotel Group. And that's a big deal. They have 6,000 plus hotels. So now the synergies and the conversations have never been more terrific because she's so interested in the hotel business. She used to, when we would go on holiday, she would have me go a day early because my favorite thing to do was go look at hotels wherever we were. And she didn't have tons of interest in that. And now she does. So now we're right there together. So it's a new chapter where she's in this business in a big way, and it's spectacular.
Yeah, I can see a lot of synergies there coming from the small business world merged with the big corporate world, but both in the same industry. Well, I'd like to talk about legacy and ask you the question that's the namesake of our podcast. And I'm always fascinated with the answers we get. And the question is, what is the why that motivates you to wake up in the morning and do what you do in your family life, in your businesses, and in the community that you serve?
So I feel so blessed and lucky. Hey, it's just nice to wake up in the morning, right? And then when you wake up in the morning, I can't wait to get to my office. I love what I do, and I love the synergies between my colleagues and myself, and I love the partnerships that that's created, and I love the dialogue that that creates. So I started this business 27 years ago, and I still can't wait to get in. And I think that's first and foremost because of the team that I'm privileged enough to work with and how much I learn from them every single day. And we have a culture here, so there's spirited discussion to reach conclusions and decisions. So the why is I love what we do. And we create extraordinary experiences, Eric, not just for our colleagues, but for our guests. But it's in that order. If the colleagues love what they're doing, as I've said, that's transparent to the guest. And if a colleague loves what they're doing, it becomes contagious to each other.
John is one of the most successful hospitality entrepreneurs in the country, so I couldn't help asking him for some personal advice. If I'm having a few friends over for dinner, what can I do to make their evening as memorable as possible?
Well, the best way, Eric, is to take them to one of our properties for dinner instead of having them over. It'll be easier for you and more lucrative for us. But I think the ticket to successful entertaining experiences are a couple. One, to be all in, to be totally focused on the moment because you're not going to have that moment again. That's one. Two, it's all about the food, the beverage, and the experience. And if we're having people to dinner, you don't want to be in the kitchen the whole time. You don't want to be hassled. You want to be having as much fun as you want your guests to have. So planning appropriately is important. In a restaurant, I often say, you know, great food starts to taste bad real quick if the service sucks. And marginal food starts to taste really, really good if the experience of the server is great. So I think that's true in a home too. If you're having a great time, Eric, you and your family, if they're hosting with you, if they're having a great time, your guests are going to have a great time.
Eric,
If I had to sum up John's entrepreneurial journey in one word, I think that word would be family. The family culture that he has instilled in his team at Columbia Hospitality, and the principles of listening, giving space, and creating opportunities that he and his wife have honored in their own family. A huge thank you to John for sharing his story with us today. If you've enjoyed our conversation, please remember to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. We'll see you next time.